Hi there, it's Ryland Walker Knight. It's Violinist Podcast. It's a little different this time. I'm not with Mark, I'm with Daniel Coffeen, professor superstar at UC Berkeley. Well, not really anymore, right? Anyways, I'm in his office in Berkeley, in Dwinnell, and we just thought we'd hang out and gab a bit about some things, movies probably, because that's what I like to talk about. You want to say hi?
Hi.
Very good. Daniel was my teacher here at Berkeley, and that was a lot of fun. We became buddies, and I took one of his film classes, and that was a lot of fun. I talked all the time and probably annoyed a lot of people. We talked about affect a lot. We talked about color. We talked about Cassavetes a lot, because we both like Cassavetes a lot. We talked about speed, because Daniel likes speed and color and how those things speak to one another. And so I think we're going to be talking about speed tonight. It's the evening, and it's really cold outside, so we're inside, and it's warm, and it's good. Because Daniel had a lot of problems with the speed of that Bourne movie, right? Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, sure. I felt very aged watching that film, right? I mean, the cuts are like every fucking 2 seconds. Right? Literally, I timed them last time. It was on cable.
Right.
One of the fortunate things is you can watch something 1,000 times. Although watching it multiple times, it becomes more compelling. And I began to feel almost like, almost cubist, right? Because they're so fast that it almost becomes layered.
Yeah.
And it keeps swooping around from these different perspectives. And it's not, you know, when I critique its speed, it's not because it's a criticism of the film. I see what they're trying to do.
Right.
They're going for something, right? And for a certain, they're trying to perform a certain kind of speed, perform this chase. Just metabolically, I find it very hard to watch. It's dizzying. And in the same week it was on cable, I was watching one of my favorite films of all time on cable, which is Bad Lieutenant, Abel Ferreira, which is just fucking outrageous. And there's a scene in it where Harvey Keitel, the shot begins inside a little tiny tenement in New York, a tiny apartment from the kitchen.
Okay.
And there's some like sort of strung out skinny model-esque junkie woman. And she answers the door and lets him in, and he sits down right in this little kitchen and smokes some heroin. He coughs, combs his hair. She tries to find a lighter to smoke a cigarette. She already has a cigarette lit. He just sits there on them, right? He coughs. He's like, I need some more. I need some more. And she sets up his heroin again. And what's amazing about it is the scene goes on. You know, you see him just shoot heroin for like 4 minutes. And it's not informational. There's no sense that he just went up there to shoot heroin. It lingers, it langers over his affect, over his, you see him shoot heroin. It is shooting heroin.
Yeah.
It's not a fact that he shot heroin. It's the experience of the shooting heroin.
And it's slow. It's,
It's lazy.
It's really indulgent.
Right.
And what you realize is that there's so much of film, the speed of film is often premised on the informational, right? So that, you know, I just thought about this. I just saw a clip from the Jesse James film.
Oh, yeah.
The new one. Yeah, and the reason I kind of enjoyed that film, although it's not a good film, is its slowness. But there's a scene at which Brad Pitt, Jesse James, is approaching some guy, one of his guys'
house
way out.
Bleak.
Yeah, and you see out the guy's window, and you see Jesse James coming from really far away. And it's coming. I'm like, oh, this is nice. This is a nice slow shot. And then it does a fade. The next thing you know, he's pulling up to the house.
Right.
I'm like, oh, just let it go. Let it go for fucking 15 minutes.
Yeah.
15 fucking minutes. That guy knows he's coming at you. Mm-hmm. Right?
That From would his, be terrifying.
That would be a beautiful scene. Yeah. As opposed to just the information that now Jesse James is coming.
Right.
Like, indulge it a little bit. But to be fair to the Bourne thing is not about information. Or it is. It's about a certain speed of information it's trying to perform.
One thing I really like about that is it's all exposition. You know, there's right, nothing right. that isn't obvious. It's like redundant beyond belief.
Right, right.
So then it takes on this kind of phenomenological quality of just right. like we're redescribing everything. Everything is happening.
Right.
And that's kind of cool. But right. it's also tiring as fuck. I don't understand how that movie made $1 billion, you know, right. like... I don't understand how a lot of the movies that make $1 million or tons of dollars make that money, because some of them are just like tiring. Like when I first saw Pirates 2, I was just like, Jesus Christ, I don't want to get the fuck out of my life.
Yeah.
Then I met Philippe and you, and we were talking about all this other cool stuff, and then I watched it again and I was just in a really good mood. So I came to realize
that movie is its brilliance is how exhausting it is. I mean, it's that it's everything's in motion. It's Philippe's argument.
Yeah.
Right.
It's so fluid.
The ocean's alive. Everything's alive. It's so grotesque. That movie, right? So,
yeah,
same
yeah,
that
yeah.
one. That it's you. I didn't know the plot. I mean, narrative was.
Yeah.
I had no idea what was happening.
There's no. I mean, yeah. If you're looking for some kind of three act thing with resolution and, I mean, the very first thing in that movie is just like. The very ending of the first movie is them getting married. Like, oh, we're going to get married. It's all happy. It's utopic. And then the very first thing in the second one is that marriage is arrested. Like, literally arrested.
Right,
like,
right.
they are arrested and put behind bars.
Yeah.
And it's tiring. But at the same time, Bad Lieutenant is really tiring, too, but in a different way. I mean, it's learning to value different things, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and then trying to speak thoughtfully about whatever.
But it's almost to the credit of that Bourne movie is that it uses this contemporary need for speed, deploys it for its own performative purposes, right? So it is about a speed of information.
Right.
Information in that film that we were talking about before we were live here, right?
Yeah.
That like, you know. In Quantico, they can all of a sudden see,
right.
you know, in a fucking train station in England. Like you wish information was that fast,
right?
But it does perform a certain a relentless speed of information that he's constantly getting trapped in and then slipping out of, getting trapped and slipping out of the network. So that movie, to its credit, takes this contemporary device of the relentless cut,
yeah,
and deploys it purposefully as opposed to just informationally.
And I guess the other thing that makes it tiring, or it then becomes hard to pay attention and to actually see. Like, you know, I think that's the other thing that makes it tough to be thoughtful about those movies is you just, it's so easy to turn off and just, would you just quit it for a minute? And then so there's like one lingering shot of him on a roof and you're like, and then he jumps off the roof or something.
Right.
And I think that's, something that we talked about in your class a lot is the ability to see. Like it's really hard just to see something, and I think that was a lot of the trouble you and I both felt in that class was getting over the informational and just like seeing shapes. Like that's just look for shapes. It's hard with something like Pulp Fiction because that is so much about the word that you get tied up in that information, but. if you're talking about faces, like, don't even look for anything. Just look for how you're feeling. I don't know. That movie is too much. Nothing you've said.
Yeah, and that's actually funny, because faces is really fast.
Yeah, but it...
In a crazy way, right? I mean, people would say that, I can't believe that scene still goes on, right? I mean, it's like basically three scenes in that movie or something, right? Yeah. And they're just epic. But the speed of affective flow in that film is insane, right?
No,
it's never just one mood in that room. It shifts relentlessly from belligerence to love to frolic to laughter.
Every face is going to be something else.
And every face keeps changing. Mm-hmm. So no face stays stable. So every face is in flux. And then they're in flux collectively. So I find faces exhausting the same way the Bourne film is exhausting.
Yeah.
Right? I find it really, really fast.
Yeah.
Although it's what's obviously great about it is that it's where Bourne is all about the speed of information, face is all about the speed of affect.
Yeah. And
yeah. Right. There's no information whatsoever.
No.
Zero.
It ends in that stairwell, and you're just like wrecked because you don't know where that is ever gonna lead. Like they empty it, right? It ends empty, and I mean it's evacuating you. Like you are just drained, and that's why it's easy for me to love Love Streams more. You know that Love Streams is just pathetic. It's it also is it's not as good probably. Yeah, it's not as smart, but it's so, I guess that a lot of it is just like, I just see a lot of myself, and that's something that I've been trying to deal with a lot recently, because I've been watching a lot of Arnaud Desplechin movies, and I just, like, Esther Khan, like, destroyed me. It was everything I like to think about, pretty much, and... That includes pretty women, and that includes like speech act theory,
Judaism.
Yeah, no, Judaism definitely.
Culture.
And acting in the world and how hard that is. And you watched it this morning, right?
Yeah, I did. I watched Esther Khan at 10 a.m. this morning. Yeah, that's a nice film. That's a nice film. That's actually.
That would be really hard to teach.
It would be, because it'd be very little to say. I mean, it sort of speaks sort of. For itself. It doesn't really say, yeah, see, there's Esther.
Yeah.
Being kind of weird. I mean...
Just mad.
I mean, you could talk about it if you want to talk about the oddity of character. That's a movie you can't tell if it's fast or slow. In a way, it's really slow. I mean, other times, it's blistering.
It fades. But it... Yeah, it fades.
Like he uses that that strategy to fade like three times upon an action. In Kings and Queens, he mostly uses those whenever somebody's like arriving someplace or departing, which is really cool. Layering all these literally arriving at train stations, and then it's just like fades like a car is driving up and it fades. It's hard to render in words right here. My hand's moving, but anyways, in Esther Khan, one of the best things in her first appearance on stage is just how you don't hear anything, and it's just three fades into her walking behind her, I think, and then you get a reverse shot, and then she walks away from the camera. That movie, his style is definitely Cubist to me, because it's... Every angle he can jam in there, but it doesn't resolve. Like that movie, like we were saying earlier before we were recording, that it's claustrophobic. Like there's that scene when Ian Holm leaves the space and she like goes and sits in the theater. That's a beautiful long take where you just watch her find her space in this weird empty theater, and then she. Like looks at how she might look up there, and it's about projection and identity as spectacle and all that cool stuff. It would be really hard to know what to tell a class to look for or anything. I mean, I didn't write anything about it because I don't know. Like you said, it's just all there.
It's easier to teach the films that are a little more aggressively avant-garde.
All right,
faces. Wonk Our Way, Right. I mean, they're really obvious. Any film that disrupts narrative is really is becomes easy to teach immediately because they don't know how to see it.
Right.
I had a kid this semester. It was hilarious. He's like, you know, I put on faces. I could not watch that film. I had to turn it off. But then I knew I had to write about it, so I had to watch it again. He goes, and then I began to see what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
That's awesome.
It was good. I was very, very happy with that. I told them, you know, you don't understand a fucking word I'm saying up here all semester. I'm doing a terrible job teaching you. I'm a terrible teacher, but at least you saw faces.
Yeah.
You know?
What else did you teach this semester?
Five films. I mean, much. I started easy with them, with Life Aquatic. And they all took to that because it's giddy, good fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And then most of them had seen it. And then Faces, Inland Empire, Wong Kar-wai's Fallen Angels. And then I ended with Band of Outsiders, the Godard. Mm. But I wish I'd done Embrace of Love or Weekend. I wish I'd done something nasty. Because they all came back being excited about Band of Outsiders.
Yeah.
A bunch of them did. Some of them had no idea what was going on, but I think Weekend would have been a little more.
I mean, Weekend is relentless and terrible. Like I can't really watch that movie. I haven't seen it in a few years just because I don't really.
I'll watch it again. It's hilarious.
Yeah, no, it is hilarious.
It's unbelievably funny.
And it's just so much. Like even his little short. Did I send you that short he made this year? That he made this short called Une Catastrophe, and it's a minute long. It's the trailer for this year's Viennale, and a critic, Nathan Lee, put it as his favorite film of the year, and it's amazing. It uses stuff from Battleship Potemkin. It's got sounds of tennis. It's got crowds yelling and basically saying a catastrophe of love. You know, like, what else is he going to talk about at this age still, you know? But how do we get on that? Yeah.
So much trying to teach kids.
Right, trying to teach and how to see, really. That's always the most fun thing to teach, I would think, probably, right?
This is what happened. I've been thinking about, since you and I were speaking, about why it fails, why I failed, right? So the class I taught, written texts, super esoteric philosophy, they don't understand, but they know how to not understand it.
Right.
Okay, so there's whatever.
Yeah.
They're like, I don't get this, but that's a familiar experience for them. Nothing happens. I showed them a lot of images, a lot of art. And that flops because they all feel entitled to an opinion.
Right.
And I'm trying to tell them I don't care about their opinions.
Right.
Like, this image makes me feel confused. This image makes me feel anxious. I'm like, oh my God, do you think anyone cares? You're like 19 and stupid. Do you think one motherfucker on the planet gives a flying fuck what you feel looking at Francis Bacon? I was like, you got to give me something else here. Tell me something about Francis Bacon, about this image.
Yeah.
Do something for me. Okay, and of course, there's always three or four kids who are lit up and are brilliant. But talking about still images, they all have an opinion, and they're all stupid. But then we get to film, and everything falls silent.
Right.
They don't know what to say. And what ends up happening, I realize, is when I start critiquing narrative, they read that all as critique of sort of concept.
Right. They want a form that it will adhere to. Right?
Well, no, but then they have no problem jettisoning that.
Okay.
But then it's all affect to them. Mm-hmm. Well, nothing but affect.
Yeah,
and they'll
what
go
are you resolving there.
Right. And then they don't know how to talk about a character. I say, I don't want you to identify with a character, but it doesn't mean there's no character per se, right? I mean, I should have taught, and I was going to teach There Will Be Blood. And that would be a good model, or even Bad Lieutenant.
I mean, Esther Kahn, I don't identify, like, I'm not a woman.
Perfect.
But
right.
I want to punch myself in the face all the time,
right.
You know? Like, there's certain associations that you cannot deny identification with, but it isn't about, like, that isn't what makes that movie good. Who should care if I...
Yes.
I want to punch myself in the face.
Right.
Everybody does. That's something like I learned more outside of school, definitely coming back, is that nobody should care who I am, you know, and that everybody hurts, and it's a lot more fun to laugh. So, I don't know, like, it's so easy when you're young just to be sad, and you don't really have much reason to be, you know, but I kind of took that off on a tangent. But There Will Be Blood would be amazing, too.
Yeah, but if the Astrakhan would have worked, too. This is how I would have taught it. Because what they didn't understand, and it's my fuck-up for teaching all these films that were so sort of bereft of strong characters, is in that, is that great, I don't know if you read it with me, that great chapter in the Deleuze book on Bacon, where he talks about the figure within the figure, right? So you got to get rid of figure, the figural, but then find the figure again. Right, as a force rather than as a category of identity. Right, so rather than saying, "Oh, that's a young girl struggling," the thing becomes this sui generis force on the screen. Right, so There Will Be Blood is a parody of that. Right, but Daniel Day-Lewis, Daniel Plainview is not a human being.
Right,
you know, it's not like, "Oh, he reminds me of my friend from Westchester's dad." You know, who worked at the fucking false faux jewelry store. It's like, no, this guy's. He exceeds the human. He becomes something else entirely. He becomes that thing on the screen, that force, that amalgamation of traits and affects and words.
And terror.
Yeah. But Esther Kahn too, right? She's not...
She's angry.
Yeah, and she's just this weird little force. She's angry, but she's also just so like elusive, and she can never become a point of projection. I'm gesturing with my hands like a moron. She'll never be a point of projection for the viewer, the way every Jennifer Aniston movie, right? You watch a Jennifer Aniston film, and it's always, "Oh, Jennifer," right? Or even Julia Roberts, whatever. It's all about these women who you're supposed to identify. Whether they're so quirky, I wish I was more like her. Or she is like me. No one is like Esther Kahn, and no one wants to be like Esther Kahn. It aggressively becomes something other. So that moves it from the point of identification or from even something off screen from memory to the side of the screen, right? So the architecture of viewing shifts from identification or subjectivity to viewing. Right. It becomes an act of viewing, of seeing, right? And it's Harvey Keitel is great at that, right? You just can't take your eyes off the guy.
Yeah.
He's not playing someone you know or someone you could know. He's playing this weird force. Right, this twitchy, weird guy, whatever role he's pretty much playing.
Yeah,
Even the wolf.
Yeah. Oh my God. Absolutely.
That's probably the parody of it, right? He's even wearing a tuxedo, right. And he's got a mustache.
Right.
But yeah, the better way to say it, maybe Mean Streets, because Mean Streets is definitely like a character study in a way. It's Scorsese who's like tied to narrative in But that's like his great movie. I think that's that.
Absolutely.
And
even Taxi Driver, you know, I watched Taxi Driver a little bit recently. I was like, God, that's a nasty little film.
Oh yeah,
You know, and Travis Bickle, man, my whole argument to them all semester was to see films as films, to see them, not to use them as informational, not to use them as references, not to use them as records of events. But to shift the architecture of seeing to the sight of the screen and you watching it.
Yeah,
architecture is such a good word with Esther Kahn, with any of them really, but like, because it also gets at a separateness, you know, like you can't look to be tethered at all. You want to be, like I wrote that in my Lola Montez thing, right? Like that, you didn't get to see that, did you? That is just like the most delicious ending ever. She's standing in this cage, and everybody's... Esther Kahn and Lola Montez are pretty tied. They're about women trying to act in the world and failing. But she's standing in this cage, and everybody's can pay a dollar to come touch her hand and kiss her hand. And so her hands are like outside this cage, and the camera's like right here on her face. It's a medium shot of her and Peter Ustinov, and they're talking a bit and then like sort of muttering under their breath, and then she's like, okay, it's time, and then they like start letting people up, and then the camera pulls back past like, I don't know, a football field of men coming up to her, and then these little guys, these little faceless carny things. I don't even know. You don't even know what they are. They aren't little kids. They aren't midgets. They're these weird little things. And they draw a curtain on the screen,
oh my God.
And you're just like you're denied, right. You know. Right. Max Ophuls is just amazing. Awesome. You should. That'll probably get put out on DVD soon. It won't be the same at all because that movie desires size. Like it needs. Like that's why I really wanted you to go see it at the Castro. That's like the only way to see that movie. But something like Earrings of Madame De, that's on Criterion Disc now. You could rent that, and you could teach that too. And because that movie spirals like that. And Lola Montez, he's just addicted to the tracking shot, and like just. There's a lot of him and P.T. Anderson. Another thing I've come to realize is I often wind up seeing a lot of things that I want to see in films, and that's the other thing you have to reckon. I mean, with anything, right? Yeah. Like your lover, the stupid projection shit. I really think that maybe it is just like. If I find something that turns me on, I'm going to want to write about it. And so I just wind up writing about the same things. And that's just, I don't want to be stale that way. So I got to push myself. And I don't know, like, but that's the fun thing about a blog. Nobody's paying me. It's all mine. So I can just do what I want. Like, this is just a goofy thing. We're just hanging out. But I'd like to get paid.
Send money. Yeah, I don't know what the fuck we're talking about right now.
Okay, we're supposed to tangent. But mostly just the idea of looking and how hard it is. Like, we both wear glasses. I don't know.
But you know what you're really good at and what these guys never got, my students can never get, was, right, they either want to, make a philosophical argument about a film, or they want to talk about the way it makes them feel, right? And what you've been so effective with is making the two seamless. They're not disconnected, right? And one of the things I've tried to tell, my students either think it's concept or affect. I'm like, no. Concept is effective. And affects give way to concepts, and it's all part of a flux. You don't want the concept to be predeterminative. It doesn't mean it's not a play, right? It doesn't mean there aren't these narrative fragments or character fragments or various figures or shapes, that it's not either, that the flux is differentiated. And that's what they don't understand. Right, they want the flux to break down barriers, but my whole point is that the flux inaugurates new boundaries and new borders that are internal,
right.
And that border might be a temporary character,
right?
And that's what Faces is. Faces to me is the flux and these shapes that emerge, and these shapes is a face becomes an imprint of affective flow, right? So the face becomes literally like a piece of clay where affect meshes onto it. Right, and so it's constantly morphing, but it keeps happening, and it keeps making these shapes. It's a relentless shape maker. It's not just the breaking of shapes.
Yeah, no. Cassavetes never seems to me like breaking.
No, but that's what the students want to do. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. They want to say, well, okay, then it's not all these things. I'm like, no.
Frame it positively. That's
yes.
The other thing you taught me.
Right. Yeah. If you want to do the negative work, you got to be done with it in two sentences.
Yeah.
It's not interesting.
Yeah.
Do the positive work. What shape does it make?
Yeah. What are you building? What are you building in this world with whatever you're gonna make me read?
Yes.
Like, I don't
yes.
care to.
Yes.
That's what I was saying earlier about, like, it's better to laugh. Like, I don't care to know shit sucks because I know that every day.
Right.
Like, I
right.
wake up.
Right.
Who doesn't wake up? You suck if you don't, pretty much. But like saying that is really bad. I don't even want to say that. But yeah. That was always my trouble. It's often just my trouble in general with talking to people. It's like, I'll get negative. Like the other night, I was hanging out with my friend, and he was like, "Stop saying you hate that player." Like we're watching basketball, and he's like, "Who do you like on the team?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I forget who they're playing, but what doesn't matter. It just matters that I learned that from you a lot.
Very seductive, the negative.
Yeah. No, I mean, because it hurts. Everything hurts a lot sometimes.
But also feels like you're doing something.
Right.
Right? So they go, John Cassavetes' Faces disrupts, traditional narrative structures. It denies, the tethering of identity. It resists identification. I'm like, all right, great. That's your first two sentences.
Yeah.
Move the fuck on.
Because
how do you end that argument that you're just that's the ter- tr- That was the bad thing about postmodernism, right? Like, then it just becomes all free play and you don't really have an argument. So that's the other thing I always get worried on my essays do, but I don't know. I feel like my essays, I just try to embody things more than come to some resolution, and that just gets tough sometimes.
No, but you know what? But your will is the exact right will to me, because it's what I always tell, I tell students, when you're writing about a movie or art, just tell me why I should love that thing. That's what I want you to tell me. Tell me why I should care. You know, I made them write about their own, I made them make their own images for the first time. And that was the best assignment I've ever given, because they freaked out. And I think a lot of them learned a ton, but also their papers were much better because they were deeply invested, and they were like, they could tell me why they loved it and what they were going for. And it was like, yeah, that's nice. Even if they were wrong, even if their readings were insane and their images sucked and I didn't give a shit about their images, I cared about their reading of their images, and I felt their passion and their love for the thing in their writing. You know, and then there was, I sent you, I remember one of the images I loved.
Yeah, that one was beautiful.
Right. And the student and the essay was terrible.
Right.
She had no idea what she'd made. You know, which is fine, right? She
Yeah.
stumbled on this thing. She made a gorgeous image, but had no idea what to do with it. You know, she didn't really know what she had done.
But that's okay.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I told the ones who didn't succeed on that paper, I was just like, you missed the potential. That's what you missed. You don't even realize what you've done here.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I've been making these little movies. I made one about you and
Really?
your boy, pretty much, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like I know what I'm doing a little bit. I think I have some ideas about images that might work a bit, but I don't know. I'm sure there's other things people see. Like, actually, I made a few longer ones too. I don't know if you watched those as well. But I was talking to some girl, and she was like, "Oh, I thought those were just home movies." And I was like, "Well, yeah, but you know, like, what did you see something happen in there?" Like, I talked to myself in the mirror. I thought that was really funny.
That's back to the slow
Yeah.
take, right? Anything that's slow is a home movie.
Yeah, no, and people resist like a digital form with a long take, especially something with a crappy resolution like that. You don't want to look at it; it gets kind of boring. But I thought I got a good angle on that stupid little bathroom I have. But yeah, I think that's the other thing. Like, you want to create things and you want to build this world up, and that's hard. But and that was my problem with Synecdoche, New York. Like, it's kind of brilliant in its like total abnegation. Like, it's just like as it's thoroughly negative. But you got a Christmas tale around and across the hall in at the Shattuck, and you could just go bliss the fuck out on just like family is terrible sometimes, but you're there. You might as well, I don't know, get drunk and climb out a window. That sounds fun, as scary as it is. And you know, it's I'm leaving the Bay Area, and so I think that ties into my wistfulness whenever I watch that movie, because like I'm leaving my dad and my sister, and my mom isn't here, and then I'm going to meet new friends and hang out with everybody in New York, and so I got all these crappy things going on, or not crappy, they're beautiful. What am I talking about? Stupid.
Complex.
Yeah, no, complex. Yeah. Anyways, and yeah, nobody should care about any of that, but people listen to this for some reason. So, anyways, yeah, my argument is just like go watch something fun a lot of the time, because I'm 26 and a half, you know, and I still want to feel young, pretty much, you know, like I'm not that old. I think I had that advantage in your class, though. Like, that leap from 19 to 24 is humongous, but.
Yeah, but there's that. But you know, I told you my smartest, most impressive student was first semester sophomore. You know, just turned 19, totally got it. You know, and very naive, not lived out in the world. You know, but just smart, just sees it. Just I don't know what that thing is. You know, like with
Willing to play with the picture,
and just willing to be open to the possibilities of approaching this thing differently. You
Yeah,
know.
that's the Gadamer openness.
Yeah,
And
yeah,
it's
yeah. It was the generosity, right? I mean, that's the thing. I don't necessarily always perform, but
No, me
but I
too.
aspire to. It's just generosity. Lend the film your eyes. Lend the image your body, and see the best thing in it. See the best thing. Tell me the best thing about this thing.
I don't. Even in a shitty movie.
Yeah.
Like, shitty movies can teach you
things. Or you should walk out and shut the fuck up about it. Yeah. But if you're going to talk about it, find the best possible thing.
How about that?
Yeah, that's it.